A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's got a whole situation at home. Ezra, 14 months old, prescribed 5 puffs of Ventolin through a spacer with a mask, up to every few hours. And Daniel's honest about the obvious part. A toddler doesn't sit still for this, doesn't understand why a plastic chamber is being pressed against his face, and doesn't care about fine particle deposition. So the first question he's asking is practical. And a little bit desperate. Once you fired the puff into the chamber, how do you keep the drug from dying in there before the kid breathes it in? The second half is about his own spacer. He wants to know whether the thing expires even if it sits in a drawer, how to clean it properly, whether an adult ever needs a mask, and which brands are worth buying.
The drug loss question has a cleaner answer than most people expect. The single biggest controllable factor is the delay between pressing the canister and the patient starting to inhale. If you fire a puff into a chamber and wait 10 seconds before anyone breathes, you lose somewhere between a third and 40% of the fine particles. They settle on the walls. At 20 seconds, a study from the 90s showed the peak plasma level of salbutamol was roughly half what it was with immediate inhalation.
So the spacer isn't a storage device.
It's a holding chamber, but the holding part is a few seconds, not a minute. The clinical guidance is one puff at a time, and the child starts breathing from it right away. You don't load 5 puffs and then bring the mask to his face.
That's probably the instinct, though. Load the thing up, then wrestle the child. It feels more efficient.
And it's the opposite of efficient. Multiple puffs loaded at once produce lower blood levels than the same number of puffs delivered one at a time. The aerosol in the chamber is unstable. It's a cloud of suspended particles, and the longer it sits, the more it crashes out. So the sequence is, shake the canister, fire one puff into the chamber, mask to face, 5 tidal breaths. Then repeat the whole thing 4 more times.
5 rounds of shake, fire, breathe. With a 14-month-old.
Which is where the compliance question stops being a physics question and becomes a veterinary wrangling question. The literature is blunt about this. The single most important determinant of drug delivery to a small child is whether the child is calm and cooperating. Crying is catastrophic. During crying, the dose to the lungs is minimal.
Because the crying breath is a short, high-velocity inhale followed by a long exhale, or they're just not breathing through the mask at all.
Both. The glottis partially closes, the breathing pattern is erratic, and the face is moving, so the seal breaks. A small leak between the mask and the face reduces the delivered dose dramatically. There's a genuine catch-22 here. Pressing the mask harder improves the seal, but pressing harder makes the child more likely to cry, which destroys the dose. The guidance is essentially calm first, seal second.
So the entire medical intervention is hostage to the emotional state of a 1-year-old. That feels like a design problem with no clean solution.
The practical advice is to make the spacer a familiar object before you ever need it. Let the child hold it, play with it, put stickers on it. Sit the baby on your lap facing you, not lying down. And accept that the first few attempts might be zero-dose attempts while the kid figures out that this thing isn't a threat.
Daniel was also asked how long the drug survives between actuation and inhalation, and I want to pin down the number. You said 10 seconds costs a third or more. What about 5 seconds?
5 seconds is tolerable. There's a recent study from this year that tested delays of 0, 1, 3, and 5 seconds across 3 different chambers. The respirable fraction barely moved. Fluticasone went from 30% down to 28%. Cyclosanide went from 33% to 25%. The authors judged it clinically meaningless.
So the cliff is somewhere between 5 and 10 seconds.
That's the honest read. The degradation curve is steep after about 5 seconds. So the technique is, shake, fire, and the mask should already be moving toward the face as you fire. You're not sprinting, but you're not checking your phone either.
There's also the shake-to-actuation delay, which I didn't know was a thing until I read up on this. If you shake the canister and then wait 30 seconds before firing, the dose changes. Early in the canister's life, it goes up. Late in the canister's life, it goes down.
The suspension in the canister settles fast. Shake immediately before each puff, and the shake is part of the sequence, not a preliminary step you do once at the start. For a 5-puff prescription, that's 5 shakes, 5 actuations, 5 rounds of 5 breaths. It's a lot.
5 puffs every few hours is a lot of medication, too. That's not a casual prescription.
That's a significant bronchodilator load. I'm not second-guessing the prescribing physician. I don't know what Ezra's chest sounded like, but 5 puffs of Ventolin through a spacer every few hours is what you prescribe when you want to open the airways and keep them open. The spacer is doing real work there, because without it, maybe 100% of the nominal dose leaves the canister, but most of it ends up in the mouth and throat. With a valved holding chamber, you're getting roughly half the nominal dose out of the chamber and into the patient, but it's targeted at the lungs instead of the back of the throat.
So the spacer costs you half the drug and buys you better lung deposition. That's the trade.
And that's why the delay and the seal matter so much. You're already working with half the nominal dose. If you then lose another third to a 10-second delay, and another chunk to a leaking mask, and the child is crying, the amount actually reaching the small airways is a rounding error.
So for Ezra, the protocol is calm child, tight seal, 1 puff, 5 breaths, repeat, and accept that some attempts will be write-offs.
And don't chase a failed attempt by firing extra puffs. If the child cried through the whole thing, you don't know how much got in, but you also can't safely assume it was zero. Overdosing albuterol is real. Tremor, tachycardia, jitteriness. Better to wait for the next scheduled round than to stack doses on top of an unknown.
Let's move to the adult side. Daniel's first question. Does a spacer expire even if it's barely used?
The consensus across the UK guidance and the National Asthma Council Australia is replace every 12 months, regardless of use frequency. The materials age. The valve can stiffen or warp. Static charge builds up over time, even in a drawer. And there's no carve-out in the guidance for infrequent use. If the thing is a year old, it's done.
So the answer is yes. Even a drawer spacer has a birthday.
And the check interval is 6 to 12 months. Look for cracks, check that the valve still moves, make sure the mask hasn't hardened. If the valve is stuck open or closed, the chamber isn't doing its job.
Cleaning. What's the actual protocol?
This is where most people go wrong, and the wrong move is rinsing. For a non-antistatic chamber, the guidance is to wash weekly in lukewarm water with liquid dishwashing detergent, soak it for about 15 minutes, shake off the excess water, and then don't rinse. Leave the detergent film on. That film is what dissipates the static charge. If you rinse it all off, you've reintroduced the static problem.
So the residue is the feature.
The residue is the feature, and you air dry vertically, never towel dry. Towel drying is a static generator. You're basically rubbing a balloon on the thing.
And anti-static chambers.
Those can be rinsed. The Aero Chamber Plus, Flow VU, and the Opta Chamber Diamond have anti-static materials built in, so the detergent film isn't doing the same work. But the average person doesn't know which type they own, and the cleaning instructions differ, which is a silent source of underdosing.
So the advice is, know your chamber. If it's a plain plastic one, wash with detergent and don't rinse. If it's an anti-static one, you can rinse. And either way, air dry.
And wash a new spacer before first use. The manufacturing residues and static on a brand new chamber are exactly what you're trying to remove.
Dishwasher.
Many are top rack dishwasher safe, but no heated dry cycle, no heavy cycle, and not with a load of greasy dishes. Water temperature under about 70 degrees Celsius. Honestly, the sink method is easier to get right.
Mask versus mouthpiece for adults. Daniel uses the mouthpiece directly and wants to know if he's missing something.
He's doing it correctly. The guidance is unambiguous. Mouthpiece is preferred wherever the patient can seal their lips and inhale slowly over 3 to 5 seconds. Adults generally need a mask only if there's cognitive impairment, learning difficulties, or an inability to maintain a mouthpiece seal. If Daniel can put his lips around the mouthpiece and breathe, the mask adds nothing.
And for Ezra, the mask is mandatory until around age 3.
Until the child can hold a mouthpiece tightly between lips and teeth and follow instructions. Some kids get there at 2.5, some at 4. The mask isn't a developmental milestone, it's a fallback until mouthpiece technique is reliable.
Brands, what should Daniel look for?
The AeroChamber Plus FlowVu is the most clinically validated chamber on the market. It's anti-static, has a one-way valve, and the FlowVu version has a visual indicator that moves when the patient is breathing correctly through it. For Ezra's age, the infant mask is size 0 to 18 months, which is exactly where he is. The child mask is 1 to 5 years.
So for a 14-month-old, the infant mask.
Correct. And the FlowVu indicator is useful for a toddler, because you can see whether the breath is actually moving the valve. If the indicator isn't moving, the seal is bad, or the child isn't breathing through the mask.
What else is worth knowing?
The OptiChamber Diamond from Philips Respironics is also anti-static and performs very well. One study from last year found it had the lowest throat deposition across different breathing patterns. The PARI Vortex is a metal-free non-electrostatic chamber, and it has an adult mask option. The Volumatic is the classic large volume chamber, 750 milliliters, and it delivers a higher cumulative dose, but a lower peak dose than the small chambers.
And what should he avoid?
The Babyhaler performed worst in a comparative study last year, lowest fine particle dose during tidal breathing, and homemade spacers, like a plastic bottle, retain the most drug on the walls. The Dolphin spacer also scored poorly on wall retention.
There's also a point in the UK consensus that spacers shouldn't be considered interchangeable. Different brands deliver clinically different amounts of drug.
And yet patients get switched all the time. A formulary changes, a pharmacy substitutes, and the patient is handed a different chamber with no education. The Italian group that flagged this said a PMDI plus its spacer should be treated as a unique delivery system, not two separate components that can be mixed and matched.
That's a good way to think about it. The canister and the chamber are a matched pair. You don't swap out half of a system and assume the performance is unchanged.
And the performance differences aren't small. The AeroChamber Plus FlowVu delivered almost double the intrathoracic deposition of two comparators in a functional respiratory imaging study this year. That's not a marginal improvement. That's the difference between the drug reaching the lungs and the drug decorating the back of the throat.
So the practical answer for Daniel is, get an AeroChamber Plus FlowVu with an infant mask for Ezra. Use the mouthpiece for himself. Clean both weekly with detergent. Don't rinse unless it's anti-static. Replace annually.
And for Ezra specifically, the technique is the whole game. One puff at a time, 5 breaths per puff, calm before seal, and don't chase failed attempts with extra medication.
There's one more thing I want to sit with. The crying catch, 22. The guidance says pressing harder improves the seal but makes crying more likely, and crying destroys the dose. So the optimal physical technique and the optimal emotional technique are in tension.
And the resolution is to prioritize the emotional state. A calm child with a slightly imperfect seal gets more drug than a crying child with a perfect seal. That's not intuitive. Most parents would think the seal is the thing to get right, and the calmness is a nice to have. The data says it's the other way around.
The parent's job isn't to be a clamp. It's to be a calm presence with a plastic chamber.
That's exhausting to do every few hours, especially in the middle of the night, especially with a child who's already uncomfortable from whatever is making him wheeze. Daniel's got a hard job ahead of him.
The 5-puff prescription makes it harder. 5 rounds of the full sequence is a long time to keep a toddler calm.
It is. And the alternative, loading multiple puffs at once, is tempting precisely because it's faster. But it's faster and worse. The blood level data from the 90s is clear. Single puffs produce higher plasma levels than multiple puffs for the same total dose.
The slow way is the effective way.
The slow way is the effective way. Which feels like something you'd know.
I do know slow. I do know slow.
You're the expert.
I'm not taking 5 breaths per puff, though. I'd be there all day.
You'd be there all week.
Fair.
The AeroChamber Plus FlowVu Infant Mask runs about $40 retail, sometimes less. I counted them once.
Keyed them?
For a hospital inventory. Late 70s. I was doing supply room work in Bridgeport. The pediatric ward had 47 of them. I counted them every quarter. The masks came in 3 sizes, and the small ones were always the ones that walked off.
The masks got stolen.
Parents took them. You'd hand a family a spacer with a mask, and the mask would never come back. The chamber came back, the mask didn't. So we'd have a drawer of chambers with no masks and a drawer of adult mouthpieces nobody wanted.
That's an inventory problem I've never thought about.
The valve was the other thing. You'd count 47 chambers, and maybe 9 of them had a working valve. The rest were stuck open or stuck shut. Nobody checked. They just grabbed one off the shelf and handed it to a family. A chamber with a stuck open valve is just a tube. Does nothing.
The annual replacement guidance is partly about that. The valve fails silently.
The mask hardens, the infant masks especially. After a year in a drawer, the silicone goes stiff and won't seal on a baby's face no matter how hard you press. We'd throw out boxes of them. The cost was nothing compared to the waste.
Did you ever see the crying problem in practice?
I saw parents fight it. The nurse would demonstrate on a teddy bear, the kid would scream, the parent would press harder, the kid would scream louder. The dose went nowhere. The nurses all knew it. They'd tell the parents to do it at home when the kid was calm, not in the clinic. But the parent wanted to get it right in front of the nurse, so they'd force it.
The forcing was the failure.
The forcing was the whole failure. The nurses would say, do it while he's watching the television. Do it while he's half asleep. Do it when he's not already upset. But the parents got the prescription in their hand, and they want to get it done. So they force it, and the kid learns the spacer is a punishment.
That's the long-term cost. Every forced attempt makes the next attempt harder.
We had one mother who figured it out. She'd put the spacer in the crib for a week before she ever used it. The kid chewed on it, threw it, slept next to it. By the time she actually gave the medication, the kid didn't care. She was the only one who did that.
The rest of them kept the masks.
The rest of them kept the masks. We ordered more.
The mask hardening point is worth underlining. Even if the chamber looks fine, the mask material ages. For Ezra, the mask is the part that's doing the sealing, and a stiff mask on a 14-month-old face is a leak waiting to happen.
The annual replacement isn't just about the valve or the static. The mask itself has a service life.
The mask is the first thing to go. The chamber's just plastic. The valve's a flap. The mask has to be soft enough to conform to a face that's changing every month. You can't get 2 years out of a mask on a growing kid.
Which means Daniel should expect to replace Ezra's spacer more often than his own, not less. The infant mask will be outgrown before the chamber wears out.
The sizing alone forces it. 0 to 18 months, then 1 to 5 years. Ezra's already 14 months. He's got maybe 4 months left in the infant mask before he needs the child size.
The child size mask is a different shape. Deeper, wider. If you wait too long, the infant mask is cutting into the cheeks and leaking at the bridge of the nose.
The seal is the whole game with a toddler. A mask that's too small is worse than no mask at all, because it gives the illusion of a seal while leaking around the edges.
We had a pediatric resident who checked the seal by putting his hand over the exhalation valve and feeling for the flutter. If he couldn't feel it, the seal was bad. He taught the parents to do the same thing. Most of them never did.
The FlowVu indicator does that job now. You can see the valve move.
The FlowVu wasn't around when I was counting. We had the plain aero chamber. The valve was invisible. You just had to trust it.
Trust isn't a quality control method.
Trust is what you have when you don't have time to check.
Daniel's got the time. At least in theory. The 5-puff protocol isn't fast.
5 puffs is a lot for a kid that age. I never saw a prescription like that for a toddler. That's a serious episode.
It is. Without it, 5 puffs of albuterol through a bare inhaler would be mostly throat and mouth, with a small fraction reaching the lungs. With the spacer, you're getting targeted delivery, but only if the technique holds.
The technique only holds if the child lets it. Which brings us back to the crying catch, 22.
The crying kid gets nothing. That's the whole thing. You can have the best spacer in the world, and a crying kid gets nothing.
The literature says exactly that. During crying, the dose to the lungs is minimal.
The parent's job is to make the kid not cry, and that's not in the instruction manual.
It's not in the prescription either.
No. The prescription says 5 puffs every few hours. It doesn't say anything about the hour of sticker application and crib acclimation that makes the 5 puffs possible.
That's the gap between the pharmacology and the reality. The pharmacology assumes a calm, cooperative patient. The reality is a 14-month-old who doesn't understand why his face is being covered.
Daniel's actual job is to close that gap. Make the spacer a toy, make the ritual boring, make the face mask a normal thing. And then the 5 puffs have somewhere to land.
The mother with the crib had it right. By the time she used it, it was just another thing in the crib.
That's the one thing I'd want Daniel to take from this. The drug loss question has a technical answer. One puff at a time, no delay, tight seal, 5 breaths. But the technical answer only works if the child is calm. The calmness isn't a nice to have. It's the delivery mechanism.
The calmness is the delivery mechanism. That's the line.
The spacer itself isn't a storage device. It's a holding chamber, and the holding part is measured in seconds, not minutes. If you remember that, the technique follows.
The one thing is, the spacer doesn't hold the drug. The child's cooperation holds the drug. The chamber just gives you a few seconds to connect the two.
The few seconds are enough, but only just.
We'll be back soon. Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing.
This has been My Weird Prompts, the Human AI Collaboration Podcast. Email us at show@myweirdprompts.com.
See you tomorrow.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.